Hello. Just before we begin this week's podcast, I wanted to say I'm in America. As you hear this, I'm heading to Texas to the American Pilgrims on the Camino annual gathering. And then from there, I head north. And I'm doing some shows in Valparaiso at Don Quixote Restaurant in Valparaiso on Friday, the 15th of March. There's a 5 o'clock show. That's Chicago time. Tickets are on sale now. If we sell that one out, we're going to do an 8 o'clock show later in the evening. So tickets are on my website, danmullinsmusic.com. And I've had a lot of correspondence from people saying, Dan, when I click on it, it says $75, but the tickets are only $50. That's because it's Australian dollars. It's an Australian website. So if you've been clicking on it, thinking, oh my gosh, $75, not $50, then that's Australian dollars. It's definitely 50 US. So just to clarify that. And the same applies for the rest of the handful of tickets still available for my walk in May, if you'd like to come. If you click on it, it says $1,000 American. It's actually only about $640 American. So it's $1,000 Australian, but about $640 or $650, depending on the exchange rate that day. Anyway, that's enough from me. I'm in America. If you're at the conference this week, come and say hello and we'll get a photo for my album and we'll chat. And maybe I might even interview you for the podcast. In the meantime, let's get into this week's episode. Hello, welcome to my Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins, and it's great to have your company. I was thinking this week about things that bring us joy. I was asked to be the MC and host of a devotion ceremony recently. A couple who live overseas are going to get married where they live, but they wanted a ceremony here in Australia with family and friends, a kind of devotion ceremony, and they asked me to host it. I was so honoured to be asked. And this couple have had and still have a long association with the Camino. And in the course of the ceremony, I said that the Camino is a path of discovery, a journey of spirit. And if you cast your mind back to Osobrero in Galicia, the highest point of the Camino Francés, atop the mountain there, you look back on the journey travelled and you can look across towards the coast. You can see how far you've come and look forward to what's ahead. Your pilgrimage continues. You know you'll eventually be heading home full of love and life. So much to look forward to, so many challenges, just so much joy. And it was a wonderful, loving, caring ceremony full of pilgrim love and light. And we used that light to reflect on what the wonderful couple had already achieved and look forward to what lay ahead, as we should every day, in everything we do. As you're listening to this, I'm in the United States to sing at the American Pilgrims on the Camino annual gathering. I can't actually count the number of people I'll know at the conference. It will be dozens and dozens. Friends I've made through my association with the Camino. How picking up Shirley MacLaine's book all those years ago changed my life. The joy it has brought me. The light it has shed on me. A song that's now in a feature film. A podcast with well over 1.5 million downloads. And a small package arrived in the post a few weeks ago from Frank and Ginny Maiolo in Colorado. They're jewelers. And they sent me the most beautiful Camino shell necklace. It's spectacular. Check out their work, monumentmoon.com. You can see some of their exquisite Camino jewelry, monumentmoon.com. And I was so touched to receive it. They thanked me for giving them hours of enjoyment listening to my podcasts. Well, Frank and Ginny, thank you for listening. And thank you for providing light and love. I placed the necklace around my wife's neck. It looked amazing. And there's an old saying, all jewelry tells a story. Well, this necklace will have some stories to tell, that's for sure. So thank you. We have so much to look forward to, so much to share. I've been very, very busy. But I was a few weeks ago playing a gig at a local pub here in Sydney, and a gentleman approached me and introduced himself. His name was Chris. He walked 4 Caminos. I'm delighted to say he's now on the line. Chris Lavers is an Australian pilgrim. I'm looking forward to hearing his story. Chris, welcome, pilgrim.
Hi, Dan. Really pleased to be here.
Yeah. Now, what brought you to the Cat and Fiddle Hotel in Balmain that Sunday afternoon?
Well, I was very keen to come and meet up with you. And, yeah, you sing live. So I've heard you singing on air, but never had the joy of meeting you in person and listening to your music in person. So It was wonderful.
It was a wonderful afternoon. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. So before we get to the Camino, tell us a little bit about yourself. Do I hear a little bit of South African in that accent?
Yeah, born in South Africa, but been living in Australia for 38 years now. Married with two children, two adult boys, one who was adopted from South Africa and one who was born in Australia. But home is definitely Australia.
So that's three. I've spoken to three South Africans in a row. That's amazing. Yeah, because last week's episode was about the Cape Camino, which just sounds incredible. Have you gone back much? Do you have much association with South Africa still today?
Yes, go back typically every year, or certainly the last 6 or 7 years I've been back every year and do a little bit of walking in South Africa, but it's much more difficult because of crime and things like that. So there are some organized walks, Otto Trail and up in the Drakensberg, but they get booked up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'd love to do it. I really would. I'd love to go over. How did the Camino come into your life?
It's something I had read about and had spoken to people who had walked it. I obviously saw the movie The Way, but that I can't say that influenced me. I hit a few snags in my life with mental health issues and found that by walking locally and starting to put in a few kilometres, most of my worries disappeared. So quickly found that walking became a good therapy for me. And that suddenly made me think, well, yeah, I'd thought of the Camino and maybe now it's the time to go and do a Camino. And so the first one I did was the Portuguese, 14 days. Thinking, because I didn't know at that stage whether I could walk a really long distance, and thought 14 days was a nice bite-sized chunk to start.
So we'll get to your four Caminos in just a minute, but when you say you walked and you found that it was good for your mental health, clearing your mind a little bit, do you have to do long walks to clear your mind, or can a short walk do just as good a job?
Sometimes a short walk is all I need, but I almost get into a groove when I'm doing a long walk. When I'm saying a long walk, maybe around the 20-kilometer mark, just get into a groove, do some thinking, meditation, listen to podcasts, listen to your podcast. And I just find that it ticks all the boxes for me.
So you're starting to walk, you're clearing your head, you're thinking, well, maybe I'll go to the Camino and do it. What do you think it was about the Camino that appealed to you?
The walking itself, just, you know, every day you're up and about, new adventures, bumping into fellow pilgrims, the places to stay at night, the churches along the way, just every aspect of the Camino itself was just uplifting for me.
Mm. If you cast your mind back to that first Camino, do you remember when you realized that you had a great connection here, that it somehow had seeped into your psyche?
Okay, yeah. So I did the Portuguese, the coastal, starting in Porto. And I must have missed the first 3 days while the walk was pretty going along the coast. It never felt like a Camino to me. It was too built up and too touristy. I was actually starting to feel a little bit disappointed, having, you know, expected much more from the Camino. And yet, just as you get to the Minho River at the top northern Portugal, and it sort of turns at a town called Camina, and then you start getting into some of the real Portuguese inland towns and into the Spanish towns, that's when the Camino really hit home. And I thought, okay, this is great. Passing the churches, going through the small villages, seeing other pilgrims en route, staying in the albergues. So, yeah, I guess after about day five onwards is when it really hit home to me.
I've heard that before. You and I both live in Sydney. We are on the coast. The city's on the coast. And I've now heard it from three different people that say that the first few days of the Camino Portuguese out of Porto is very much like Australia. It's very much like our beaches.
Yeah, very much walking along. It's very pretty, and the beaches are what surprised me. I was last in Portugal probably 30 years previous to my Camino and remembered it as a bit of a dirty, not such exciting place, whereas now it's stunningly beautiful. It's spotlessly clean. All the infrastructure. So the coastal walk was good. It just, I guess, it didn't quite meet my Camino expectations for those first 3 or 4 days.
Okay, so that's the Camino Portuguese is the first one. Tell us about the next three Caminos.
Okay, so when I got to Santiago de Compostela at the end of the Portuguese Camino, I had a night in Santiago, then carried on and did the Finisterre or Fisterra one out to the Cape and to the end of the world as it is. And that was just beautiful. Very few people seem to walk, very few pilgrims on that walk. And lovely little villages, mostly through countryside. So really enjoyed that. And then I thought, well, I'm here. I've got a few more days to spare before I had to meet up with my wife, who was also traveling in Europe at the time. And the English, I had 6 days. So I caught a bus from Finisterre through to back to Santiago, and then a bus from Santiago down to Ferrol, and then did the English from Ferrol back up to Santiago. So really, I did the three sort of back-to-back.
What's the Inglés like? What did you think of it?
Interesting. Quite a lot of hills and climbs. So a physically tiring Camino. But having said that, I was pretty fit by the time I did that. And the very last day, I got to what was going to be my second last day, got to a town at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I already finished my 20-odd kilometers and thought, what am I going to do today? Go and check into the albergue and twiddle my thumbs. So I just carried on walking into Santiago. So that was a 42-kilometer day. Oh. You told me, would I walk 42 kilometers when I started the Portuguese? Absolutely never. But by the end, yeah, pretty fit. And that last day's walk was fantastic. I never saw a single pilgrim in the last 20 kilometers, not another person. So just me. And the path is mostly through farmyards and cornfields and that until the last probably 3 or 4 kilometers as you enter the outskirts of Santiago. But most of that walk was through farmland. So a very pretty walk.
And well signposted?
Very well signposted. So never had any problems with directions.
What about places to stay? Were you expecting to have to walk 25 k's to find a bed, or was it varied?
No, there's certainly enough infrastructure. Nowhere near as many albergues as on the Portuguese or the Francis, but adequate for the number of people who are walking it, because it's not a particularly popular, it's not like a Portuguese or the Francis. So the infrastructure is sufficient for the people walking. And I had no trouble. Actually, that's not true. There was one place, hospital, let me see, I did make a note, Hospital de Bruma. It's 2 days out from Santiago on the Inglés. They only have one municipal albergue in town. And I wasn't game to take my chances that I'd find a bed. And so I found a small hotel about 3 kilometers away where a guy would come into Hospital de Bruma and pick you up. And because he had a monopoly, he charged monopolistic prices. So that was a bit steep. But that day actually turned out to be a blessing, because on the walk, I first met up with a German guy, Andy, and he didn't have a bed for the night. And I was actually in a triple room. So I invited him to come and share a bed in my room. And then lo and behold, we bumped into a Danish lady, Rika, and exactly the same thing. She didn't know where she was going to sleep that night. So I had two other pilgrims sharing my room, and we had a fantastic evening, went out to a local restaurant, and it was just lovely.
Yeah, I think those chance encounters are, well, they often say the Camino provides. It is those chance encounters that make it so special. I think that's fantastic. So that's the Camino Portuguese, the Finisterre, and then the Inglés. What's number four?
And then last year I did the Francis from St. Jean Pied de Port through to Santiago de Compostela. And that was fantastic, just absolutely brilliant.
So my next question, are you a spreadsheet pilgrim? Do you do a lot of planning?
For that one I did. For the previous year, I did relatively little planning. In fact, virtually no planning. But last year I did a lot of planning, working out potential overnight stops. But having said that, a lot of it changed on the go. You know, when I found I was maybe a bit fitter, or speaking to other pilgrims where they were suggesting the town wasn't as good as I might have thought. So I chopped and changed the plans on the go. But I did start off with a good spreadsheet of where I had planned to sleep every night with a fair few bookings. I tend to stay probably, well, on the Francis has ended up probably being two-thirds in pensions or hotels and a third in albergues. So a bit of a mix.
Was there any particular reason for that?
Not particularly. I guess in the smaller towns, I tended to book up a hotel for booking.com or a pension, knowing that inevitably a day or two beforehand you could cancel. Whereas in the bigger towns, I was quite happy to take a chance that I'd find enough accommodation if I got there and the municipal albergue was full.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point you make about bookings.com. You can cancel 48 hours up until...
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great aspect of that particular app or program or whatever it is. So cast your mind back to the Camino Frances or Porto or Inglés or even Finisterre. Where's a favourite place? Where would you like to be placed if I could magically transport you back there for a day or two?
Quite a few. How long is this session? Excuse me. But really like the big towns on the Frances, like Leon and Burgos and Pamplona. I mean, the cathedrals and the cities themselves with all the history, the cobblestone streets, the alleyways, the hidden pubs. So really, really enjoyed those cities. But then on the smaller places, towns like Molinaseca on the Francis. I don't know if you remember, if you're going up to Costa Ferro, and you've got that whole, you're descending over 1,000 meters, and it's a bit quite tricky underfoot. Mm. And it's about a 27-kilometer day walk. And then you get to Molinaseca, and they've got this beautiful river. And sitting with a beer, it was a very hot, sunny day. So that stands out as one of favorite memories.
I love Molinaseca. The water is freezing cold, but it's beautiful. Put your feet in. It's really lovely.
Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah. One day I was there. There was a festival on and a big concert down by the river. It was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. What about other pilgrims? Were you a very social kind of guy, Chris? Did you enjoy meeting pilgrims from around the world and socialize easily, knowing and mindful of the fact that you have had some sort, you know, you talked yourself about your mental health?
Yeah. I tend to keep to myself. Having said that, I did have lots of chats with pilgrims on the way, but they tended to be short chats, 15 minutes, half an hour, an hour. There weren't too many that I teamed up with and met on consecutive days. So the German and the Danish girl I mentioned, we met on the one day, and then the following day we also walked quite a bit together. So I saw them. I met up with a German couple on the Portuguese, and over 3 or 4 days we met and had drinks or maybe a meal together. And then the odd pilgrim here and there. But by and large, mostly keeping to myself. For the last 5 days on the Francis, my wife and sister-in-law and my wife's brother and his wife joined us, and we met in Soria. So they came and did the last 100 kilometers with me, which was really special.
So is the walking, given that you do a lot of walking, is it easy or difficult for you when you find yourself on the Francis?
When I started the Francis, I'd been traveling through South Africa, in fact, for close on a month. So I wasn't as walking fit as I would like to have been. And that first day, going up from St. Jean Pied de Port over the Pyrenees, that was tough for me. But again, by the fourth or fifth day, you get into the groove, you quickly pick up the walking fitness again, and no, it was easy thereafter.
How fantastic. What do your friends and family make of Chris the Pilgrim?
I'm known as the walker in the family, and it's amazing how many times they send me little tidbits. Any walk they read about, I get an email or a WhatsApp, have you thought of this walk, have you thought of that walk? So I'm very much the walker in the family.
When you talk about the mental health aspect of it and the walking, can you see yourself continuing to do so, continuing to use it as that escape?
Most definitely. As I say, for me, I just find it the very best therapy I can have. Beats any medicines. I'm not saying people with mental issues shouldn't take your medicine and stuff like that. But for me, it just ticks all the boxes. So I'm already planning some walks for this year and have a few in mind. So yeah, God be willing, as long as I'm fit and healthy, I will continue walking.
Are you retired?
Yes, retired.
Fantastic.
Grey hair didn't give me away.
You mentioned earlier the big cities, Burgos and León, and the history. That's what I find just amazing. What about you? Are you like me, taken with the thought that millions of pilgrims have walked the Camino before you?
Yeah, it is very special. That whole Camino story and the founding of, you know, the cathedral in Santiago. And you go along, you know, some of these nondescript churches, I think of like, you know, Santa Maria Basilica in Pontevedra and, excuse me, some of the other churches, you know, been there for hundreds and hundreds of years and all the history around it and in all the hospitals and the old hospitals and the old ruins of the hospitals. When you come into some of these towns, which might be small today, and you read they had at one stage 20 hospitals, all I can think about is how many pilgrims there were walking in medieval times, in ancient times.
Yeah, I think the caring aspect to me is still part of the tradition. That, okay, not everybody in the Spanish village is going to be kind to the pilgrims, but by and large, most people are. And quite often, if I ask people to tell me a story, they'll tell me a story about great kindness that they received from the Spanish, from the people, or the Portuguese, or even the French or the Italian, when pilgrims. And I think that's a carryover from their history, that it's always been towns taking care of pilgrims, making their way to the shrine.
Yeah, I agree. And some of the albergues I stayed at with their pilgrim meal, I mean, the host or the hostess just going over, bending over backwards to make it welcoming and inclusive, and you're really in their homes in most of the times, and just very, very special. I think of one in particular in Religos, a lady there at, she's a vegan and she puts on this most magnificent vegan meal. But if she's a single mother, her five-year-old daughter was sitting at the dinner table with us chatting away, and you're in her home. It was just lovely.
Can you remember where exactly it was? Was that house back a little way? There's in Relagos, the main square, there is a bar there called the Elvis Bar.
Yes.
And was it back toward the town before and to the left, a white house?
I can't remember the color, but as you're coming into Relagos,
yeah,
there's a cafe. And if you and the road like splits into
two. It
does,
yeah.
If you carry on the right-hand side past the cafe, you come to the Elvis Bar. If you go left, you take the left fork. Maybe only 100, 150 meters, you come to her place.
Las
Hadas.
Las Hadas? Yeah. In 2016, I was in the Relagos, and there was nobody else in the entire town. It was just me. It was me. And I went to the Elvis Bar and I had a beer and I thought, well, I'll just go home and read or something, lie on my bunk in the albergue. I was the only person there. And as I was walking down the street, there was another pilgrim sitting out the front of that albergue, that pension with those people. But I think it was maybe her parents.
Okay.
And they invited me in for a meal and we sat out that pilgrim Pedro and I sat out on the street. Yeah, I know exactly where that is. How fantastic. Wow. Worlds colliding. So it becomes this big part of your life now. You using it as a means to kind of take some pressure off the thought process that can sometimes be troubling and can sometimes bring you stress and angst. How do you describe its impact on you when people ask you about it? Or are you someone who just says, oh, it's a long walk and are you more mindful of its impact on you when you're describing it to people, the Camino?
I think I'm almost like preaching to them about the Camino. I don't take it lightly and I don't talk about it just being a walk because it's the whole experience. The walking is just part of the experience. And so I'm very much singing the praises of the Camino. And it's something I would never have believed until I did it myself. Because if you look at it, it is, you know, basically it's just a walk. And so what's so extra special about walking until you're actually there, and just the whole experience of the walk and the Camino and the history and the people and the fellow pilgrims and the albergues, just everything. It's the whole package that makes it extra special.
When you get home, do you seek it out in other forums? Do you read books about the Camino, watch documentaries about the Camino?
Well, I listen to your Camino podcast all the time. Lee Brennan also has a podcast, and Dave Whitston. So I listen to their podcasts. And there's a Camino chapter in Sydney I attend sometimes. So yes, and I am on a couple WhatsApp Camino families. So yes, I'm very much involved in still reading about and following the Camino, and love hearing what people are doing and their experiences.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think then that continued involvement is helping your mental health as well, not just the walking?
Most definitely. So like sitting now in the last couple of weeks, planning about the next walk later on this year, yeah, again, very uplifting. Sort of, I think, and preparing for our chat today, just thinking of the memories of the Caminos I have walked, I just find that experience, again, uplifting. Even if I'm not walking, the memories are there.
Yeah, every week, it takes me about between 6 and 8 hours a week to do this podcast every week. And it takes me about an hour and a half to write the script. I sit down and I make sure I'm not going to be interrupted or anything, and I can really focus. And I love that hour and a half of writing it. Of course, I love the chats, you know, seeing your smiling face on my screen here, and sitting in this beautiful little studio. That's just heaven. You know, I just really love it. But also then the editing as well. It's like I listen back through and I chop it all up, and I just love it. It's good for my mental health too. It's just such a great thing that we've all found, I think, that we can help just to straighten, you know, to steady the boat a little bit. But it's not easy. Let's face it. The Camino is not easy. You talked about that walk, Chris, down into Molina Seca. That's a difficult day. That's hard on the knees and hard on the hips. And if you don't have poles, that's actually quite a dangerous walk. So what do you find most challenging on the Camino?
That's an interesting question. certainly the downhills, like that particular day with a lot of shale and slippery rock. So I swear by poles. I walk with poles. I don't know how people do it without poles. So I guess the downhill bits I find probably the most challenging. I mean, the uphill, you just take your time and it passes. So the downhill bits, I guess a couple of days as one's body rhythm goes, maybe just not quite in the mood. And maybe the day itself then just becomes tiring and long and a bit of a slog. Hmm. But most of the time and most of the days, I'm fine and very happy and in the groove. So to single out any particular aspect that is tough, no, not really.
Yeah. I think we've all met pilgrims, haven't we, who are really not enjoying the Camino at all.
Oh, no. And those people, I'm absolutely blessed. 4 Caminos, not a single blister. Wow. So I look at people that are passed on the side of the road, and you see them with their feet all bandaged up and really in pain. I have a lot of sympathy for them because, yeah, I say, not a single blister.
So you must have been and still walking in the same shoes.
Predominantly, I wear Merrell's Moabs.
Oh, yeah.
Moabs. I just find they my go-to shoe. So that's what I walk in, and they're just perfect.
Yeah, I've got the big brother of the Moabs, I think. The three-quarter cut ones, yeah. I swear by them. And when they say they're waterproof, they really are.
Okay. I'd say water-resistant for mine, but they are so comfortable.
Yeah.
And even when my feet get wet, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is just fine.
Fantastic, fantastic. So we talked about the history. What about the traditions of the Camino? Do you love all of that, the shell, the stamps, the credencial, the Buen Caminos?
Oh, most definitely. And certainly each day trying to find out where I'm going to get my stamps for my credencia. Most definitely. And seeing all the queues at some of the cafes or in the cathedrals getting their stamps, I do love that. I do attend quite a few pilgrim masses on route. So if a town has a pilgrims mass, I try and make a point of going to that. So I do love the tradition.
Are you a religious man?
Yes, I am. I am Catholic, and I do go to church. So
yeah,
so it's an extra bonus of being on the Camino.
Yeah, well, some of those masses are quite spectacular. Even in the little villages, they're spectacular.
It's almost the little villages that, to me, are the best, because you inevitably get the pilgrims there from a whole host of different nationalities. And, my language skills are useless, so I can't speak Spanish or French or anything like that. But just being in the presence of the mass and seeing the joy on the faces of all the other pilgrims, and the priests are in everybody in these small towns are so welcoming. Oh, it's just lovely.
Yeah, it's the language barrier can be a bit of a challenge, although it's mass is mass, right? It's pretty much the same everywhere around the world.
Yeah.
I remember being in the church in Sahun, and they invite the nuns there, and the priest invited all the pilgrims up onto the altar to bless us. And they said something in Spanish. I didn't know what it was. I thought they were asking me where I was from. I said, Sydney. And then later at dinner, one of the other pilgrims said, you know, she was asking your name. And so there was these other two Dutch pilgrims. For the rest of the Camino, they called me Sid. They called me Sid for the rest. They thought I was so funny.
Good way to get a nickname.
Yeah. They called me Sid for the rest of the thing. Yeah, there could be a challenge, but that's all part of it, isn't it? And what about Compostelas? You would have three, would you, from the Pilgrim's Office?
I've got three. That's correct, yeah. I didn't get one for Finisterre because it's only 90 kilometers. I didn't do the leg up to Muxia. I just went straight to Finisterre.
So what did you make of that coast? That right out on the headland at Finisterre, the end of the world.
Absolute highlights of all the Caminos, sitting there with a gin and tonic, looking over Cape Finisterre, over the lighthouse, just beautiful.
Yeah, and you can imagine what those the pagans and pilgrims of yore would think when they got there. It must have been astonishing.
Must have, you know, this is the end of the world. There's nothing beyond. We've reached it.
Yeah.
Quite an experience for them.
And for us, yeah, as well. That's great. So when we talked about your research and everything, before you went on that first Camino, the Camino Portuguese, did you do a lot of research? Did you know how much weight you had to take in the bag? And did you have all the whiz-bang gear?
Not as much as I had for the Francis. So you asked earlier if I do spreadsheets. For the Francis, I actually did a spreadsheet where I weighed every item in grams. So I knew down to the finest detail exactly what I was taking. On the Francis, I was traveling with probably a total backpack of about 9 kilograms. So that's backpack gear and everything.
Water too? And,
500, so half a liter of water too, yeah. Whereas I think on the Portuguese, I was probably carrying 10, maybe even 11 kilograms. So I certainly refined it by the time I did the Camino last year.
So give us one tip then you learned from packing or walking. One tip you've learned: if you have spreadsheets, you must have tips.
The tips. So if there's any doubt whether you need something or not, leave it out. So that's a tip. Certainly I've gone for thermal merino wool stuff, both for t-shirts and for warm clothes, because they're so light and they're excellent in rain. They keep you warm. They snug, they don't take up much space. So definitely the merino wool stuff is a definite plus for me.
It's not too hot walking in that during the day?
Not. Even in a merino t-shirt, I find it's amazingly cool for me. It works well for me.
Oh, that's interesting.
In a short sleeve, merino short sleeve shirt.
Yeah. I have to wear long sleeve because of the sun. And of course, I wear the buff up around my neck to keep the sun off my neck. So it can get quite hot. But you think merino might be cool?
I find it cool. Maybe it's doing a trick on my mind, but no, it works for me.
That's great. So I'm going to ask you a question now. What did you learn about yourself on those four Caminos?
Probably patience. I've always been a got to get go, got to be active, got to be doing things. Whereas on the Camino, yes, while you're walking, everything is just at such a nice slow pace. Everything about it is slow. And there's no rush to get anywhere in particular. sitting down and chatting to people. And if a coffee break is taking 15 minutes or 45 minutes or an hour, who cares? If you get to the town at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, who cares? So, yeah, learning patience was something new for me.
And patience and learning patience is very good for your mental health.
Most definitely. Yeah. And, yeah, very much so.
Yeah, yeah. I could do a lot more patience. I'm extremely busy at the moment, and I find myself the impatience is what really stresses me out.
But Dan, I look at your workload and everything you do. I don't know how you do it and how you accomplish it.
Yeah, I don't either. So, okay, where to next? What's next?
So the walks I'm looking at might do the Portuguese Camino this year, the inland ones. I did the coastal, so I'm looking at the inland. I was looking at the Lopoi, Podenas. But everything I'm seeing on the websites now on WhatsApp, they say most of the accommodation is booked up already because there aren't that many geets on that walk. So it's something I'd like to do, but I think I've probably left it too late this year. But two walks I'm particularly interested in is the St. James walk from Reading to Southampton in England.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where the pilgrims used to go, and they catch a boat from there across to Ferrol and then do the English. So it'd be.
How far is that walk?
It's about 120 kilometres, yeah.
And I wonder where you'd stay. Have you done much research?
I wrote off for a book on the St. James Way from the Confirmatory of St. James. I'm just waiting for that. So I don't exactly know where. But then the other walk links up from Southampton through to Canterbury, and it's called the Old Way.
Mm.
And the maps date to the 1300s. And there's a lot of material on the British Pilgrims Trust on their website on that particular walk with all accommodation suggestions. So there's stuff from actually staying in the churches. Many of the churches provide basic accommodation through to pubs and hotels and pensions. So that's a very well-documented walk on the Pilgrim Trust website.
And do you know how far that one is?
That is 21 days. So I think it's about 300, just over 300 kilometres.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's another one on the bucket list. I'll have to, or the booklet list, as we say. I'll have to make sure I learn more about that. That's great. I wonder then, are you expecting those walks to be as moving as the Camino?
No, I'm not. And that is a concern that it could potentially be an anticlimax because listening to a couple of the websites I've been on, there are relatively few pilgrims that walk. So chances of bumping into people are slim. And there's not as big a religious focus not as big a traditional focus. There's apparently still a lot of churches and religious monuments on the way, but not as big a traditional focus on those walks. So, while I'm keen to do them, I am a little bit with a bit of trepidation whether they will live up to the Camino.
I know that you can generally walk through properties in the United Kingdom. Has your research shown you that if you were walking, say, to Canterbury, that you'd be on the road or off the beaten path? Do you know?
No, it's mostly on tracks, on
pathways.
Yeah, mostly on pathways.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I mean, if you're not going to get the same Camino, in inverted commas, type of experience, well, maybe the trade-off is that it would be pretty spectacular countryside.
I mean, you are walking through towns, but once you're out of the towns, it's mostly on tracks and across farmyards and farmland.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds incredible. Well, it's just so great to talk to you, Chris. I think I'm really excited for you that you've found this extraordinary outlet, that's helped you with your mental health, which is really, really exciting. A great message for anybody listening who's perhaps feeling a little stressed and feeling a little like they need a good way to relieve themselves of some of that pressure. Walking is a very, very good way. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. Why don't you tell us a Camino story?
Oh, which one should I take? There are so many. One that I found most very hilarious was the cathedral with the chickens. I don't know if you remember that cathedral in Santo Domingo de la Casano, I think you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Story about the German pilgrim family that were passing through this village, and the local girl wanted to befriend the German guy, and he wasn't interested. So she planted some jewelry in his backpack. He got caught, and he got hung as a thief. Anyway, the family carried on, finished their pilgrimage. On the way back through the village, his body was still hanging up on, he was crucified, he was hung up on a tree, was still hanging up, and he was alive. And so they went to the local sheriff, and he said he was cooking roast chickens for dinner. And he just poo-pooed them and said, there's no way, he's as dead as the chickens that he was roasting. And at that point in time, they brought the guy in alive. And so what the tradition since then is to honor chickens. So even in the cathedral, they have a big chicken coop with live chickens running around in the cathedral. I just think that's quite a funny story.
If you stay in the municipal albergue in town, there's a chicken coop in the backyard of the property next door, which is apparently the direct descendants of the chickens.
Well, they say the chickens in the cathedral are, because they rotate the chickens every month or so, they get fresh chickens in the cathedral.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody's eaten a lot of chickens.
I think someone's eaten a lot of chickens.
In Santo Domingo del Cavada. Oh, yeah. What a great story, Chris. I know that a lot of pilgrims listening to this, a lot of people listening to this will share my view that I'm so pleased for you that you found this great way to make yourself feel better and to get fitter and stronger. You found an outlet. You found something that you really love and enjoy. Thank you so much. It's been such a pure delight to talk to you. Thanks for coming to see my show a few weeks ago. It was lovely meeting you in person. And thanks for taking the time to talk to me today. It's been a great chat. Buen camino.
Buen camino to you. Bye-bye now.
My guest this week was the Australian pilgrim, Chris Lavett. And that's a great yarn. Somebody who has found walking and the Camino gives them the support they need to deal with mental health issues, and the great message from Chris. Thanks for your company. If you're heading to the American Pilgrims on the Camino annual gathering in Texas this weekend, come and say hello. And another shout out to Frank and Ginny Maiolo from Colorado, who sent me the most beautiful Camino shell necklace. It's spectacular. You can check them out, monumentmoon.com. That's all we have time for this week. I'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino. Someone